Hi everyone, it's Emily from 21 and Sensory, and I'm coming back at you with episode 15. So I realise I've been gone ages in terms of podcasting. Like, the last podcast I did here was in May 2019, so apologies, to be honest. 2019 was a busy year, and I was also lucky enough to be interviewed on a couple of other podcast shows, which was exciting. So I was interviewed by Nikki from @teachingautism on Instagram on the Teaching Autism podcast. So that was in November 2019, and we talked all about masking, about who I am, what is the definition of masking, why someone might mask, what sort of effects masking can have on an individual, how to actually mask, and how, like, within the autism community, we can kind of support each other and stuff, and my own sort of personal experiences. So yeah, that was one podcast that I was interviewed on. Another one that I was recently interviewed on was the Thoughty Orty podcast, and that was by Thomas. So Thomas is at Asperger's Growth on Instagram. So I literally just did a podcast like a couple of weeks ago with him, an episode on his Asperger's Growth podcast show, and we just talked all things sensory and autism related. So he's sort of the founder of the Asperger's Growth channel, so he's very into like chatting about autism and mental health, and kind of an advocate for that sort of thing. And he talked to me about my kind of sensory needs and difficulties, and the like many reasons why having SPD can make life a little more difficult to navigate. We talked about sort of the recent development of the Sunflower Lanyard Scheme as well, which is quite interesting, and also what sort of people can do to cope with daily life, and the ways other people can kind of make being sensory just a little bit more comfortable. So yeah, we talked about all those sorts of things, and also I talked a bit more about my blog, my Instagram page, and my Twitter. So yeah, if you want a little bit of an insight into how I run my social media and stuff like that, yeah, it's well worth having a listen to. So yeah, if you have a look at Teaching Autism, so that's Nikki, and she does loads of like stuff about like teaching kind of aids and stuff like that for people who are autistic. So go check her out on Instagram, and at Asperger's Growth, which is Thomas. So yeah, I was kind of, in 2019, I mainly focused on my illustrations, I guess. So that's why I haven't really been podcasting, but I'm always up for like podcast interviews and stuff, just because making my own podcast takes a lot of time. So yeah, in 2019, I mainly focused on my own illustrations. And as a result of like these, my presence on Instagram has proper like grown. I'm super thankful for that. I just had a look at my follower count. Not that, you know, followers are, you know, you should get hit up on followers and likes and stuff, but I almost have 5,000 followers. So I had 1,000 followers in May 2019. So that was when I last podcast. And yeah, today I have almost 5,000. So quite excited for that. So I also continue to keep my blog up to date with these illustrations as well throughout 2019, so you can have a look at my drawings on both my blog and my Instagram. I guess, what have I done since May, really? I've tried lots of like different things out, I guess. I've tried out yoga for the first time. I've actually been going to local sessions with my mum. It's actually quite nice to kind of have a partner in crime to go with. So yeah, we've been like steadily kind of going to one every, like a session like every 2 weeks on a Friday evening. And it's quite a nice way to sort of, I don't know, after like a busy weekend? After a busy week, just like decompress a bit. And yeah, I found it really helpful. And I think both me and my mum are getting more flexible, which I think is, you know, only a good thing. But it's also quite a kind of, not meditative, but like a kind of calming way to kind of, I don't know, it's just quite zen-like almost. I do find some of the exercises kind of difficult, like when you have to, like, at the end of a session, you kind of like lay, you have to lay very still as a kind of reflective thing. And I still find that quite difficult because I'm fidgety. But yeah, other than that, it's really good fun. What else have I done since May? I think I've, this isn't like a thing I've done, it's a thing I haven't done, but in a good way. So I've learnt to say no to more things in the most polite way possible. I'm starting to realise more and more that it's okay to say no to things, and if I know that things are going to overwhelm me, that I might as well just not bother getting so het up and worried about like social events and stuff like that. I might as well just say, look, it's not my cup of tea. That's quite a British saying, it's not my thing, it's not my cup of tea. And you know, just being polite about it and just saying, you know, it's not my scene, it's not something I enjoy doing, going out or, you know, meeting and stuff, and like saying alternative stuff, like going for like a coffee instead of like going to a pub, like a busy pub or something like that. So yeah, I think I've learned to say no to more things and give, like, cut myself some slack a bit. So what else have I done since May? I've literally just said yoga and saying no to stuff. I think I've also, I don't know, I think I've lost a bit of confidence in a way. And I think towards the end of the year, like, I received my autism diagnosis, and that was in November 2019. And I'm going to do another podcast episode just all on that. I've done a blog post on it, but I'm going to do a podcast episode on it as well. So I think that was a real turning point for me, finding out that I'm autistic, and I'm 25 years old. And yeah, that's kind of, I don't know, was never really picked up throughout my childhood, and it was a big thing for me to find that out in a kind of sense of closure way, but also in a affirming, you know, I struggle and this is the reason why. So yeah, I think 2019 was a weird one. It was good and bad. You know, you have good days and bad days as an autistic person, and I think a lot of people will agree with that, you know. And you reflect on your bad days and forget the good days quite easily, which is difficult. But yeah, I thought I would do my own like separate podcast on that, just because I have a lot to say about it, and I thought it would be good to kind of share my journey. So yeah, I'm just kind of rambling now. But we're going to do a little noises segment thing where you guess all the noises. So that's coming up next. I've done it on previous podcast episodes. So if you're new to my podcast and you're just listening to this one, it's worth going back and starting from the first one. I always do like a little segment where I go out and record noises of places, and you can kind of guess where they are and what I've been experiencing and stuff like that. So yeah, that's coming up next.
type of stuff. It's like one child, they have the door open for him.
Right then, from the beginning, so the first noise that you heard was me in a restaurant. I'm pretty sure I was with a couple of my friends, and I just kind of left my phone on the table to record. So that was quite a busy one. And then the next one that you heard was me in my local hospital, actually, like in the like foyer bit, the like reception bit. And I think you heard like a baby crying in it, and like some checkouts as well, because there's like an M&S in my local hospital. So yeah, that was quite an overwhelming one. It was quite loud in there. The next couple of ones related, because they were me at the seaside. So the first one was of like the sea, and you could hear a little bit of the like shingle from the beach. And then the second one was mainly just beach shingle and me like crunching on the shingle, so that was very relaxing. We went to the beach as a family when we were all off. I don't know when this was, it must have been like October half term or something. So that was nice. And then the next one was at a garden centre with my mum and my sister. It's always really noisy at garden centres. Like, we were at the like cafe bit, and they always have like crashing plates and like noises like that, which can be a bit overwhelming. And then the very last one was on the London Underground. So that was the very, very squeaky underground train. It's definitely worth wearing noise cancelling headphones or ear defenders if you're travelling on the London Underground, because it is squealy for some unknown reason. So those were all the noises. Okay, everyone. Right. Let's talk weddings. So, random, I realise. I was invited to a wedding back in, I believe it was August. Yes. So this was a wedding of a friend at work. She'd been obviously very excited because it was her wedding. Since I'd known her for about a year beforehand, so she was kind of new at work, and I kind of got to know her over a year. And then she invited me and I think three other people from work to her wedding in the August. So her wedding was in Bath, which is in the UK. It wasn't like a ridiculous journey, because I don't live too far from London, so just London to Bath basically. So weddings, I don't like them. I never have and I never will. I don't know what it is. I do not like a special occasion. I'm putting it out there. It's not my thing. Totally understand why people do it. That's cool, you know. I understand that obviously it's a big day, and I find it really weird. I don't like dressing up, which, I mean, we're on episode 15 now. It's probably very obvious if you've listened to these podcasts at all that I don't like dressing up. I don't like dresses. I just feel uncomfortable if I'm not in jeans and a jumper. So I knew it was going to be difficult. But I had friends who were going, which helped. So we all decided to book an Airbnb. So basically the plan was to, on the Friday after work in August, me, my friend and my other friend at work. So basically I have a friend who's a girl and another friend who's a guy, and they are together. So I worked with them, and then another guy that I used to work with was also invited with his partner. So basically, I was going with two couples, and I was ever so slightly the spare wheel. So there was five of us, but it was really nice because I get on with them all, and they're all really lovely friends. So the plan was to meet the other couple who were coming from Stevenage at the Airbnb in Bath on the Friday evening, and then we weren't invited to the actual wedding, we were invited to the reception-y bit afterwards. Is it called a reception? I think it's called a reception. And the like dancey bit, party bit afterwards. So we would have the whole day in Bath on the Saturday, and then about 7 o'clock-ish we were going to get an Uber to this kind of, it was like a country estate sort of place, yeah, where the whole wedding was like taking place. And then we'd have Sunday the next day to kind of chill in the morning, then go back out in Bath for like lunch or brunch. So that was the plan. So on my Instagram, if you let me have a look, if you go on underneath my profile, you'll see that I have lots of little highlights. So if you find the one that says party survival, you can kind of almost look at all the photos as I go through explaining how my day was. But yeah, it's under party survival, and it's got like a little volume icon. So I'm just going to go through it to remind me what I was doing. So I put out on Instagram, I said, so this weekend I have to go to a wedding, luckily only the evening part. I struggle with occasions like weddings, parties, celebration, that sort of thing. I find it hard to wear a dress and look formal, and I just don't do formal. I'm staying with some friends and I'm travelling with them to the wedding, so luckily they were driving and I wasn't. I'm obviously not great at sleeping in places which aren't my own home, and I put on my Instagram highlights that I like my bedtime routine. I just like my own bed. Everyone likes their own bed. So yeah, I was obviously grateful for being invited, but I thought I'd share my experience like on Instagram at the same time. So I put that out on Instagram, and 96% of you said that you'd like me to share my experience, which was quite impressive, seeing as that was seen by like 320 people. So that was nice. What was my next little highlight? So I did a little like suitcase highlight, just me packing. And then my friends were meant to come and like pick me up after work. They were meant to pick me up and they were like 15 minutes late, which stressed me out because I like it when people come on time. I'm sure most people do. Anyway, I was stressing out slightly because I didn't want to leave my house and go somewhere I didn't know for an entire weekend, but I was trying to bury that feeling a bit. And it was, do you know what? I was speaking to my mum, and I think it helped to document my whole experience because it was a form of distraction, like letting you guys, like having to keep you guys updated almost. It was like a little project for me, which really helped. Anyway, so my next highlight was my friends were still running late and it had been an hour, so I was getting very stressed. And they finally arrived after about an hour and 10 minutes. I think they just got held up at work, whatever. So we got in the car and we started to go, and I was like, oh, okay, great, we're on our way. But actually they had to stop for petrol. So I was like, we're not going to get to Bath until it's dark, which we didn't. Basically our friends had got there way, way before us. But anyway, so we finally got on the road. The trip was fine. We kind of listened to like one of their Spotify playlists. So that was okay. And I kind of just texted, I think I was texting my mum and my sister in the back. Yeah. So I sat in the back, which was nice. And just kind of chatted with my two friends in the front. We did arrive finally. We were like a couple of hours late in the end. And it was a really nice Airbnb. It was like really kind of open plan, and it was like a proper like Bath townhouse. So you went up one level and it had one bedroom and a bathroom, and you went up another level and it had two bedrooms. So the couple that got there first obviously got the like the bedroom on the first floor, and then the two bedrooms right at the top of the house were for me and the other couple that I traveled with. So yeah, did a little room tour. What I didn't realise was that I got into my room. It was really nice. It was quite kind of not old fashioned, but just kind of quite basic. But I had two single beds in my bedroom, which actually worked out really well because I obviously slept in one bed, and the other one I just laid my suitcase out on. So my suitcase had a whole bed. So I didn't actually have to unpack stuff and put it in drawers and stuff, because I always feel a bit weird about putting my stuff in other people's drawers. So my suitcase had its own bed, which was super helpful because it meant that I could just grab stuff and lay stuff out on the bed and see what I had inside it. So would recommend like getting another bed for your suitcase if you can. And I brought like fidgets and chews with me in my suitcase. So that was super handy. So yeah, mine was like quite a long thin room, and I had a single bed, which was fine. I'm used to sleeping in a single bed, and the two couples had bigger rooms, but they had double beds in. So yeah, it was fine. I knew I was going to find it a bit difficult because, like, I don't know, bedding and stuff smells weird. It doesn't smell the same as what I'm used to. But I tried to do the same routine as what I do at home. Like, I have my medicine. I sit in bed for a bit. I'll read, go on YouTube. Like, I tried to create a little, like, same routine sort of thing. So that was good. So yeah, went to sleep. I think it took me a while to get to sleep, but only just because I wasn't used to just my surroundings. So the next day I posted a highlight saying that I survived the first night, whoop whoop, despite the duvet smelling of a weird detergent and like new house slash like outside noises. I woke up at 5 a.m. but it was fine. I, you know, like, wasn't tired or anything. So yeah, I felt I did well. So I came downstairs at like 7, and then I felt like everyone else felt that they had to get up, but I just came downstairs for a cup of tea because I was just like wide awake. But yeah, I think we all like sat in our pajamas for a bit. But yeah, and we had some jammy dodgers and tea for our breakfast. It was really sunny, so I took sun cream with me because I'm pretty sure I've said this, I'm ginger and very pale, so I catch the sun. So we went for a wander around town. And as I said, the wedding reception started at 7, so we were just trying to like occupy ourselves. So we went into Bath and it was really lovely. Like, the town is really nice. It had a really nice high street. We just kind of wandered through, had a look at all the kind of, I don't know, historic like bits before we went into the actual town centre, which was actually really busy. You can see that on my highlight. And then we went to a restaurant called Leon, which I hadn't been to before, but it's really nice. So I had like a quinoa salad and we sat outside because it was quite warm. It was like August, which was much better because it was less crowded, and I had feta cheese in my salad and it was the best. Would definitely have again. Yeah, so it was quite nice because we knew we needed to have a main meal before we went out in the evening, because we thought it was going to be more like finger food or like buffet food. So yeah, we did that, and then where did we go from there? We went back to the Airbnb. So we walked all the way into Bath and then walked all the way back. So we did, I had a look at my Fitbit and we did like a ridiculous amount of steps because we decided like we didn't want to take our cars because it was going to cost us quite a bit to park. So yeah, we did, it was kind of good to kind of tire myself out a bit, I think. So we all just went back to the Airbnb afterwards and chilled before getting ready for the wedding. And what I found really difficult was that both girls who I was with, they spent ages getting ready, which is totally fine. Like, obviously I'm very much like, you don't need makeup. You know, like I felt like they're both very pretty anyway. But yeah, I got slightly attacked by them with their curling tongs, but it was okay. I managed. And I just kind of put my dress on at the very last minute because I just don't like wearing dresses. And I had heels as well, which were a total nightmare, and I wish I'd gone for flat shoes. I ended up spending the entire evening barefoot, which was fine. But yeah, they took a really long time to get ready and they put a lot of makeup on, and I don't really wear makeup. I don't wear makeup every day. If I wear makeup, it's just mascara or it's like concealer to conceal spots. Other than that, I don't do anything. Luckily, I don't have acne or anything like that, which I'm very lucky not to have, so I don't need to cover my face a lot. And I also feel like if foundation and stuff can be kind of weird feeling and cakey. So I quite like to just go natural because, yeah, I'm freckly, I'm ginger, I'm just natural. So yeah, they took a long time to get ready. They both look very pretty. And we all had like kind of curled hair. Although mine, like, I have really thick hair, so it just like dropped out immediately. So I'm not really sure why they bothered. Anyway, so we got ready. And then I ordered the Uber. I'm very organised and enjoy ordering Ubers. I like seeing like on the tracker where you can see where it is. Like, I like knowing when it's coming. Unlike friends, when you don't know when they're coming. So yeah, we got to the wedding venue. It was really beautiful. It was like, because it was sunny, they had like this whole outdoor area with like garden party style games like Jenga, where you like build the blocks up and try and remove bricks. Don't know if it's called Jenga all around the world. And like lawn, like bowls where you can like, a bit like Skittles. Yeah, loads of little like garden party stuff. And then it had like an indoor kind of amazing like barn. So it was like on a country estate. And they'd had the wedding in the barn, and then when we got there it was being all like reconfigured. So they'd had a meal, so all their tables were being moved back, and it was kind of like the party, like start of the evening bit. So we were greeted by my friend, so the bride's dad, who was really lovely and was expecting us, so that was nice. And then we all went and got a drink. I got a juice because I don't drink alcohol. even though everyone was like, I'll get you a drink, I'll get you a drink. I was like, I literally just want a soft drink. Anyway, so we all, like, obviously, I found it really difficult because my friend who was the bride was really busy because she was the bride. And I couldn't, like, I wanted to chat and be like, oh, it's your big day, like, it's really nice to see you, and like I know how much you've been looking forward to it, but obviously she was very busy. So me and my friends were complete children and went and played Jenga, and I think we also did like the like lawn bowls where you like roll little like weighted balls towards like a marker. That was fun. And it was really nice to have like a garden to retreat to. Like, we could just go and hide like out in the garden almost. just away from like all like the family and stuff. It was difficult, like obviously we're not like hiding away from the family, but we didn't know any of the family. I'd met her fiance once before, and he's really lovely, and so I knew him, but obviously as friends from work we didn't know any of the family, which was a little bit difficult. So yeah, if you look on my highlight, my friend's actually juggling. And you can see the whole like kind of country estate in the garden. It was really pretty venue, and it was really sunny, and there were like hot air balloons going overhead as well. It was really pretty, I would definitely say that. And because it was kind of August summery time, we could all sit outside. So one of my friends, he doesn't like dance, isn't comfortable dancing, which I was like, yay. So we like sat outside for a bit, but I did go inside and I did like pretend to enjoy dancing because I knew it would mean a lot to the bride to see like us all enjoying ourselves, even though like some of us didn't want to dance anyway. So we could kind of go in and out as we pleased, which really worked well. Yeah, and It was really lovely, like, wedding venue, and it was really nice to go. So on my highlight, I messaged my mum, and I said, it was a lovely wedding. We spent a lot of time outside, which was good. And she said, oh, good, you did it. And I just messaged back, hashtag survived. It honestly worked out really well. So having the whole outside garden, like, area super helped. And it made it, like, easy to escape the rest of the guests and allow music. Although, luckily, it wasn't, like, a crazy loud party music sort of thing. I spent a lot of time not wearing my shoes because they hurt me so much. I just couldn't walk in them. I don't even know why I bothered. So I walked around in barefoot and then washed my feet when I got back to the Airbnb. I hated wearing the dress, but I did take it off and got straight back into my pyjamas on immediate entry back to the Airbnb. So that worked really well. I had a really nice time with friends. Oh, I've only drank water. But everyone else was obviously drinking. I think I managed okay, and I took regular breaks, which I would say is the key thing at any special occasion. Take breaks, take time out, go to the loo, hide for 5 minutes. It's cool to do that, it's okay. Like, we're just not cut out for special occasions. So yeah, the next day we went back into Bath, had a look kind of at the Roman baths from a distance because they were expensive to actually get into, and then we went out for brunch, and I'm pretty sure I had pancakes and they were incredible. I love pancakes. So it was all worthwhile. I think I was still quite overwhelmed. So in the afternoon, about, I think like 3-4ish after spending some time in town, I think we also got an ice cream, which was great. We all sort of went back to where we lived. So I put on my highlight that on my way home, I was feeling a bit on edge in terms of like feeling a meltdown coming on sensory wise, just because of all the different environments that I'd been in and the smells and the clothing that I'd endured over the weekend. And it's kind of weird because it drains me, but it's something I know and recognise as they're, it's just that sort of thing. So I felt very weirdly emotional, but usually a cry like later on in the day like helped. And I think I did get back and I had a cry. So yeah, I went to a wedding and I survived it, and I was really happy for my friend. I think I was just weirdly emotional because like I thought I'd be able to spend time with my friend and I'd be able to talk to her. But obviously it's like a really big day, a wedding, and she was busy with all her family who are like obviously really important. But I don't know, it was just a weird dynamic to be there as a work friend, I guess. But yeah, I survived and I'm glad I went. So yeah, just thought I'd tell you all about that. So I wanted to talk a little bit about masking. So I mentioned it a little bit in the intro to this podcast, but what actually is masking? So I actually did a doodle on this and it's over on my blog. So let's get to it. Masking involves trying to hide being autistic so that other people will accept us. So that is the basic definition of masking. It's also referred to as camouflaging as well. So this means that we act in ways that other people will think are sort of normal, in inverted commas, because obviously there is no normal, and to try and be accepted socially. So actually my doodle includes a few examples of like trying to mask. So kind of personally, I would say over the course of my life, I feel like I have perfected the art of masking, which isn't necessarily a good thing. I'm extremely good at withholding my feelings and emotions and bottling them up until I get home. So for example, I would cry when I had to go to primary school each morning, and then speed forward a bit in time. I'd come home from secondary school each day very tearful. I even at one point used to go and cry in the Senko's office. So Senko stands for special educational needs and something else. Basically the like special needs coordinators room at break and lunch times, because secondary school is quite literally the most overwhelming place I've ever had to cope in. But slowly through sixth form, so college and university, I began to build up a bit of a resilience to the world, and I would say although I still got overwhelmed, I can always come home and I have a bit of a sensory meltdown and a good cry and then move on with things. So actually today at work, one of my friends left, so she's moving on to another job. She's not moving house, but she's moving jobs. So I came home, well actually on the way home in my car I was crying, and when I came into my parents I was still crying. So yeah, things hit us harder as autistic and sensory people, you know. It's in the word sensory, really. We are sensitive souls. We are always going to be, you know, our senses are heightened, our feelings are heightened. So yeah, in a nutshell, I think socializing will always be hard for me. And I think I'll probably always cope with the world a bit like this, but actually I think that's okay. I have to sort of actively remind myself that normal, in inverted commas, isn't real. And I think also you should too. Because masking is an autistic and a sensory way of coping with the everyday and just trying to get by. And I actually think that's really brave. Just to like go out in the world and just exist is a huge thing. Okay, so I want to talk about the Royal College of Art. So in August 2019, I went to the Royal College of Arts in London to help the very lovely Becky from At Sensory Spectacle. You can look her up on Instagram, and you can also, she has a really comprehensive website as well, which I recommend checking out. She's got loads of like resources and stuff like that. Her philosophy almost, or vision, is to educate about sensory processing disorder through sort of immersive learning. So she does a lot of workshops and stuff like that. At Sensory Spectacle. So yeah, she contacted me and she asked me if I would help document my sensory experience within the Royal College of Arts in order to help her create a sensory map for visitors. So basically, the Royal College of Arts had contacted her and said, can you make a sensory map for our visitors so that they know what to expect when they come into our galleries? Which I think is really a good thing in terms of sensory like processing awareness and autism awareness. So I went with my sister because she actually lives in London and her awareness of London and the underground is much better than mine. And as you heard earlier in the noises segment, the underground is very squealy and disorientating. So yeah, I found it very helpful that she came. I documented my trip on YouTube and also over on my Instagram. So you can see it on my highlights under the London trip sort of highlights. So I'll just run you kind of through my day. So it was a sensory mission for me. Basically, a sensory being coping with travelling and walking around a city, but also going into a gallery, which is overwhelming, you know, generally, and kind of documenting each gallery area and stuff like that. So if I start from the start of my day, I was overwhelmed at the idea of just going into London, so I deliberately had a quiet day, like the day before. But I know it's good to challenge myself because I've been to London like a few times and actually not a few times, loads of times. And I know what to expect and I know it's going to be a sensory nightmare, but I know I'll manage. I packed a little kind of handbag for the day with fidgets and stuff in because, you know, sensory being. And then headed into London with my sister and managed on the underground despite the squealiness. Although I still find escalators so weird. I am the worst with escalators because it's a moving staircase, people. Like, I get the concept that obviously it moves people quicker, but timing is an issue with, you know, moving stairs. And also stepping off them because you're going at a different speed to when you get, you know, like from stepping off to going on the floor, you like slow down. Anyway, I'm an awkward being. Anyway, so yeah, managed and stood on the right. Is it the right side? The left? The right side of the escalator? Yeah, it's a London thing. I don't know. So yeah, we made it to a Royal College of Arts. So I had a little sit down with Becky and she kind of just went through what she was sort of expecting from the day. So she gave me quite literally a map of the gallery and said, and gave me some fine liners as well and said, look, can you colour code the areas that you find sort of too loud, too bright, quite busy, stuff like that. And also I kind of jotted down notes as well of the areas that I found difficult. So so me and my sister then just wandered around the Royal College of Arts, which is a really interesting gallery kind of experience if you go for yourself at all. We had a really good time. I think it was difficult because we walked around it once and then I kind of made some notes and then I thought we should probably walk around it again. And I kind of made notes as I went around, but it was really little things. Like there was one gallery that was really nice and you walked into it and it was dark, like really dark, because they were like really kind of ornate frames and like old portraiture. So obviously like galleries have to keep their like lights low and the walls dark so they don't get damaged by sunlight. And that was such a nice gallery to be in because they had huge long sofas in the middle of the room so that you could sit and like properly look at the artwork. And to me that was really good. It was kind of in a way, an escape room, but also a quiet room that you could appreciate the art in. And I feel like that was, you know, even if you're not a sensory being, it's good to appreciate art in the quiet and the dark, and, you know, for these to be kind of lit in the proper way. So yeah, I was kind of made a point of saying, you know, if you're feeling overwhelmed, try and head to this gallery. And also, like, the main foyer was, like, really loud. And, like, even stuff, like, I was picking up on so much because I'm sensory, and I guess that's why Becky asked me, but even, like, the flooring would change, and, like, some, like, one gallery which was more modern and, like, modern art, it had, like, really squeaky wooden floorboards. So I was like, well, I need to label that. And I kind of made a point of making sure that I kind of went to all the galleries that are permanent, and because it was in the summer, they have their, like, Royal College of Arts, like, summer show, and that's, like, a paid show, and I was only looking at the galleries that are permanent. So obviously you don't want to make a sensory map for a summer show that's going to go quickly, so I just looked at all the permanent galleries, and even just kind of labeling, like, corridors and stuff like that, where, I don't know, it was more crowded, or it was the kind of the lighting changed, and because there's a real mix of, like, modern artwork and lots of modern photography, and then actual paintings, so the light level changes, the mood kind of atmosphere changes, and also just labeling things like the cafe kind of area being quite loud and, like, clinky with glasses and mugs and stuff like that. Yeah, so I wrote this all kind of down on a big sensory map, and I think Becky was getting a few different people kind of in that she knew would be able to help her with the kind of sensory mapping of the gallery. But yeah, it was a really interesting experience, and I don't know, it felt like I was helping, you know, just also because I'm a graphic designer and I study graphic design and stuff like that. Like, for me, like, galleries and stuff like that, they don't always get it right in terms of, like, catering to all. So yeah, it was really interesting, and yeah, I want to say thanks to Becky, and I hope that, you know, visitors can hopefully in the future make use of a good old sensory map. I want to have a really quick chat about labels, and when I say labels, I don't mean, you know, I don't know, labeling people, I mean labels in clothes. So they've always been a problem for me, so, like, clothes tags, labels inside clothes, whatever you call them, yeah, they've always been a problem for me, and I'm sure many of you out there too. The struggle to find clothes without, like, super annoying tags or labels, and that are made of non-itchy/bearable fabric, is such a pain. Like, obviously I understand why tags and labels are inside clothes, like, I get that, like, you need to know, like, how to, like, size stuff and know how to wash it and the manufacturer information and all that, but I don't understand why they aren't easily removable. And I know some brands are like, they're easily removable, but actually they never really, like, tear off properly, and they never really, like, cut off properly, I don't think. So yeah, I either suffer with a tag in a t-shirt or the back of my jeans, or I cut them out and still suffer with the scratchy bits of the tag that is left behind. So I think, let's be honest, we've all accidentally made holes in t-shirts trying to remove annoying tags. So I do actually have some good go-to brands when it comes to label-free clothing. So recently I found some clothes in Uniqlo, such as t-shirts and jeans without tags tags at the back of them. So they just have, like, almost like a printed kind of on the fabric, which is a miracle. And yes, I got excited. But does anyone else know of any reasonably priced clothing brands that come without tags? Please let me know via social media. That would be great. My mum was also telling me about M&S in the UK, so Marks and Spencer's, who have an adaptive clothing range for children, which is annoying because it's only up to age 16. But for children with disabilities, which I think is really great, and it's also been expanded since it launched. So there are actually around 1.5 million children in the UK who have a sensory or physical disability, and so I think it's a really great step in the right direction, and hopefully teens and adults next, maybe M&S, Marks and Spencers, do you want to collab? There's the dream. Anyway, it's hard to sort of explain, but if you are a sensory being, like me, a simple tag can really overwhelm you. So for neurotypical people, I'm going to put it like this. Imagine having something that irritates you and affects your mood throughout the day. A tag and a label is such a small thing, but they cause me such huge meltdowns because I cannot function with it touching and like hurting me physically. So yeah, this overwhelm also applies to uncomfy clothes, aka special occasion clothes. I do not feel naturally comfortable in a dress or a skirt or tights or a fancy top, etc. But I am able to wear these when I have to and the occasion is fancy. Ugh. Anyway, I will, however, immediately put on a jumper and jeans on arrival home, which you probably heard when I was talking about having to go to a wedding earlier in 2019. So yeah, that's just a little chat about why I find tags, labels, you know, the Bibles that come inside, you know, t-shirts and stuff like that, when there's just loads of information on them. Like, they are painful to us sensory beings. So yeah, less labels would be a better thing. Okay, so this is the last bit of this podcast. I know it's been a big ramble, but I wanted to talk about the books that I've been reading. So, books of 2019, everybody. So, these are obviously sensory / autistic related books, just because I want to kind of spread awareness of these. And I've read them and they're really good. None of these have been gifted or sponsored or anything else like that. I've bought them off Amazon because, you know, I'm not that famous yet, everybody. People aren't sending me, you know, fancy books. Anyway, so the first book I read was The Electricity of Every Living Thing, One Woman's Walk with Asperger's by Catherine May. So just a little bit about this book. In August 2015, Catherine May set out to walk the 630-mile southwest coast path in the UK. She wanted to understand why she had stopped coping with everyday life, why motherhood had been so overwhelming and isolating, and why the world felt full of inundation and expectations she couldn't meet. She setting her feet down on the rugged and difficult path by the sea, she felt that the answers began to unfold. A chance encounter with a voice on the radio that sparks a realisation that she has Asperger's syndrome is kind of what this book is centred around. So yeah, the book tells the story of the year in which Catherine comes to terms with her diagnosis. It leads to a re-evaluation of her life so far, a kinder one which finally allows her to be different rather than simply awkward, arrogant or unfeeling. The physical and psychological journeys become inextricably entwined, and as Catherine finds her way across the untamable coast, she also finds the way to herself. So Catherine is kind of, I think she works as a kind of freelance writer. So she does lots of kind of like, writes for like newspapers and things like that. And yeah, this chance encounter with a voice on the radio sparked this entire realisation that she had Asperger's syndrome. And that's why she kind of went for a late diagnosis in her life and yeah, was told that she had Asperger's. And I don't know, it was a really interesting read. It was obviously quite personal and you really got a sense that she did really begin to understand herself more the further she walked, and the more kind of physical aspect of walking and, you know, the tiredness and, you know, all these different kind of things played into the fact that, you know, sometimes if you just get out in the world and just she walked by herself and sometimes with friends, that she really had her thoughts to herself and she could really kind of process things. And yeah, I think it taught me that also, I don't know, that it's good to get outside. And it just for her, walking that southwest coast path was something she felt she needed to do and she felt would help her understand herself. And she was right. Yeah, I really recommend this book. Available on Amazon, UK, US, etc. But yeah, also it's worth googling Catherine May. I think she's written other books as well. I think she's also got a new book coming out, which I'm definitely going to try and read. So yeah, that's one book I read, which I really recommend. I've started reading The Highly Sensitive Person by Elaine N. Aron. So, she's written a few books on HSPs, which are highly sensitive people or persons, and kind of research around that. And I started reading this in 2019. Obviously, it's now January 2020. So, I think I'll tell you a bit about the book and then why it's taken me so long to read it. So, it's been a really good book. It's kind of gives you insights into highly sensitive people and the research around that. And kind of, I'm interested in all the things like sensory related and understanding myself and learning about sensitivities and sensory processing disorder further and stuff like that. So it's weird to have like read stuff like about this, but she's spreading awareness through this book. So yeah, it's a book on how highly sensitive people kind of, I don't know, how they live, and how if you are a highly sensitive person, that it's not that you're not normal, it's just that you have a different sort of makeup, your brain's wired differently. And she's also written another book called The Highly Sensitive Person in Love. I've kind of read around this. She's done a lot of like groundbreaking research on like obviously like sensory stuff and on temperament and intimacy. So The Highly Sensitive Person in Love book offers practical help for highly sensitive people seeking happier, healthier romantic relationships. So I'm just reading this little excerpt. So from low stress fighting to sensitive sexuality, the book offers a wealth of practical advice on making the most of all personality combinations. Complete with illuminating self-tests and the results of the first survey ever done on sex and temperament, The Highly Sensitive Person in Love will help you discover a better way of living and loving. So yeah, she's written The Highly Sensitive Person and The Highly Sensitive Person in Love. So I'm yet to read the second book, but I have it. So the reason why I said I'm still reading it is it's a great book and it describes me beautifully, but it's really difficult to read because it's so sensory and everything she talks about is stuff I'm struggling with, and it's really hard to read about stuff you're struggling with, and it kind of, it like strikes a chord and it gets you a bit upset. So especially last year, I'd like run to my mum and be like, oh my god, read this paragraph in this book because it's me, and she'll be like, oh my god, it's you. But I have to read bits of it in between reading like other books, because it's really hard to just read about something that you struggle with. And because I'm a sensory being, I obviously feel things quite hard, and it's a hard-hitting book because it's like, these are the things you struggle with. But obviously there's like self-tests and stuff like that in it, and it is really good. So I'm just reading another little bit about it. So statistics show that 50% of what determines divorce is genetic temperament, apparently. And if you're one of the 20% of people who are born highly sensitive, the risk of an unhappy relationship is especially high. Your finely tuned nervous system, which picks up on subtleties and reflects deeply, would be a romantic asset if both you and your partner understood you better. But without that understanding, your sensitivity is likely to be making your close relationships painful and complicated. So yeah, The Highly Sensitive Person in Love is obviously the next book, which I want to read because, yeah, it's about relationships and they are difficult if you are a sensory being, like it says, you know. You want you and your partner to be understood better. So yeah, I want to read about that and hopefully learn some stuff. Yeah, she's definitely a smart lady. So her name is Elaine N. Aron. So just search The Highly Sensitive Person or The Highly Sensitive Person in Love via Google, or again, I got both these books on Amazon. I think they've done like kind of reprints or like other editions, but yeah, would recommend them both. Obviously I'll try and do like a full review on my blog when I properly read them, but I think it's helped the first book that I'm reading, it's kind of helped me to understand that I wouldn't be me if I didn't have my sensoriness, and I'm trying to think more about it being a superpower I have rather than a drawback. So yeah, would recommend those two books. I know I haven't read them both yet, but they really go into a lot of detail. And I think it's important to understand all these sensory things. Okay, and then the last book that I read is called Camouflage, The Hidden Lives of Autistic Women by Sarah Bargilea, sorry if I said that wrong, who's the author, and Sophie Standing, who's the illustrator. So autism in women and girls is still not widely understood, and it's often sort of misrepresented, there we go, or even overlooked. So this is actually a graphic novel, and it offers a really engaging and accessible sort of insight into the lives and minds of autistic women, and it uses like real life case studies. So these illustrations kind of lead readers on like a visual journey of how women on the spectrum experience everyday life. And there's like kind of metaphors and masking and social situations and friendships and relationships and the role of like special interests within autism. Yeah, it's a really fun book, and the colour scheme is beautiful. It's really informative. It's a good resource for anyone who wishes to sort of understand about kind of gender affecting autism and how to be like safer and supportive and have accessible environments for women on the spectrum. So yeah, another really good book that I would recommend reading. Yeah, let me know what you think of these books. Okay, everybody, that was episode 15, a huge 2019 roundup. Thank you very much for listening. If you got this far, I am amazed, because we're like, I just had a look at how long it is and it's like an hour. So I knew it'd be a bumper episode, because obviously I haven't done one since May. But yeah, I'm gonna try and get more on it. And I know I said that in May and I didn't. But as you've heard throughout my podcast, 2019 was a weird one. It was full of highs and lows. I'm sure it was for everyone. But yeah, found out I was autistic at the age of 25. Who'd have thought it? Well, I kind of thought it, but I meant who'd have thought I would find out at 25. Yeah, so hope you enjoy my podcast. So episode 16 is going to be an autism edition of kind of my journey from babyhood, childhood, right the way through to diagnosis. So stay tuned for that. I'm hoping it's going to come out February, March. So yeah, I promise I'll be more on it. Don't hate me. hope your new year, I know it's the end of January, hope your new year had kind of gotten off to a good start. And I saw a great Instagram post today that said, guys, January was just the like free trial that we can skip that, you know, we're just gonna go on to February as the start of the year. It's all good. So if your January hasn't been fab, we got February, guys. It's okay. You just got to keep going. You got to hang in there. Life is tough. It's really tough. I'm getting all deep now. What? But yeah, you are coping and you are surviving and you are living every day. And that is something to be massively proud of, because the world is flipping difficult. So yeah, guys, thanks for listening. If you want to stay up to date with all things 21 and Sensory and Emily, at 21 and Sensory on Instagram, Twitter, that's it, yep, and my blog, 21andSensory.wordpress.com. So yeah, feel free to message me, email me, 21andSensory@gmail.com. I'm always open for a chat. So yeah, thanks very much for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Bye, guys.